Welcome, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. More than 91% of adults in the United States now use cell phones. That's according to a recent study by the Pew Research Center. And worldwide, 6 billion people have access to cell phones. In fact, according to a UN study, more people on the planet now have cell phones than have working toilets. But this phenomenon is relatively new. Do you remember the world without cell phones, like I do? Are you young enough that you don't remember? It's only been about 2 decades since we even had access, and the smartphone explosion occurred just within the last several years. With how much we're using these devices, we assume that they're safe, right? Right? But scientists are still researching how this all affects us. In 2011, the World Health Organization called cell phones a possible human carcinogen. But the cell phone industry has fought back against what they say is fear-driven, faulty science. Where do you, as the consumer and the person putting radio waves next to your brain, stand on the issue? How should we regulate and label cell phones? What do we know about cell phone safety, and what don't we know? What questions should we be asking, and how should we use our devices accordingly, especially with regard to our children? Joining us to talk about this, we have in studio Deborah Davis, who's a visiting scholar at the Goldman School of Public Policy and the Center for Environmental Policy at UC Berkeley, and she's founder and president of Environmental Health Trust. Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We're also joined from Finland by Darius Lisinski, who's a research professor with the Finnish Radiation and Nuclear Safety Authority. Hi, Darius.
Yes, hello.
And both Deborah and Darius will be speaking about the health risks of cell phones along with a panel of 11 other experts at the San Francisco Commonwealth Club on Monday, December 9th at 11:30 a.m. We have all of this information at yourcallradio.org. I'm going to open the phones in just a minute. But first, let's start about getting kind of clear about how cellular technology actually works. So, Deborah, can you explain it in a way that anybody can understand it?
Well, basically, a cell phone is a two-way radio, and it uses microwave radiation to communicate to the tower and to get signals back and forth. And the way American phones are programmed, every 900 milliseconds, that's more than once a second, it's searching for a signal from a tower. If you're in your car and you have your phone next to your head and you do not have the antenna going through the roof of the car externally, your head becomes part of the antenna. And each time you move from one cell area to another, the phone surges to max power. So it's a two-way microwave radio, and more importantly, it's never been tested for its impact on developing brains and bodies.
On kids.
Ever.
But it has been tested on what, you say, a 6'2" man?
It's been tested to avoid heating up the brain of a man, a very large man who's about, maybe was at the time, 3% of the U.S. population.
And so how do you compare my smartphone, my iPhone, with the laptop that I've got in front of me or my transistor radio? Or how do we look at these kinds of radiation effects on our bodies?
Electricity for us today is a little bit like sex was for the Victorians. You know, everybody uses it, everybody does it, but nobody really understands it or talks much about it. So there's a lot of confusion about it. The electricity that powers your light bulbs is very low in frequency, 60 hertz, 60 cycles a second, 50 cycles a second in Europe. The electromagnetic pulse that powers your cell phone is the same frequency as a microwave oven. However, it's very weak in its power. An oven uses 750 to 1,000 watts. A cell phone uses 1.6 watts per kilogram or less. Okay? So it's much, much weaker. And it used to be thought that it was the power that made the effect. And because it was so weak, they never were tested for their safe effects except to avoid heating. We now understand that there are biological consequences. Partly we know that from some of the work that Dr. Lisinski has carried out. And I'll let him talk about that work. But his studies have shown that there are effects that have nothing to do with heat.
Okay, so I'll get to Dr. Lisinski in just a second. But what you say, in essence, is distance is your friend.
Correct.
This is your main takeaway that you want people listening to know.
And there's a reason why we no longer refer to laptops as laptops. They are not safe when you put them directly on your lap. They are tested at a distance of 20 centimeters, about 8 inches, a little bit more, from the body. And a lot of these devices that you see people putting right next to their reproductive organs have never been evaluated for their immediate impact on the body. And we're concerned about the long-term impact. Nobody's going to drop dead right away unless they have a pacemaker that's being interfered with, from a cell phone radiation or laptop radiation right now. But there are increasing reports of sensitivities to some of these things that we do not fully understand, and we have no serious research underway on an experiment that we're conducting on ourselves.
So we're the lab rats.
Exactly.
And so in your blog, Darius, it's called Between a Rock and a Hard Place. We have a link to it at yourcallradio.org, along with all of this information, and you can post more information there. But you advise parents not to let kids use smartphones at all. Can you explain your reasoning on that?
In this particular blog, I had in mind not effects of radiation, but other psychological effects that surfing internet may cause to children. So it seems like, and there is more and more talk about this addiction to our gadgets, to those different electronic gadgets that you see on the street, you see in schools, you see everywhere, young people all the time playing with their smartphones, all the time on Facebook and so on.
Darius, I'm going to actually ask you to, let's not talk about that. We want to just talk about the science and the health effects of this for now. Deborah is saying that you've done a lot of research on this. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, we have done research, and as mentioned, it seems that effects that we obtained and observed in cells in laboratory, they were caused by not temperature, but something else, other effects of this radiation, so-called non-thermal effects. This is what we observed in laboratory, is that when cells, living cells, are exposed to some agent that interferes with normal functioning of the cell, cell is triggering so-called stress response. It is a set of molecular events that protect cell from eventual harm that this agent could cause. And cell phone radiation triggers this kind of stress response in cells. So it means that when we exposed living cells in laboratory conditions to cell phone radiation that is fulfilling all safety levels and limits that are imposed on cell phones, this low-level radiation induces stress response, meaning that cells recognize this low-level radiation as something what is potentially damaging their function, and they begin stress response, this molecular event, to protect themselves.
And that's Darius Lozinski. He's an expert in the biological and health effects of cell phone radiation. He's joining us from Finland. We're also joined by Deborah Davis, who's founder and president of Environmental Health Trust, and she's the author of Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation, What the Industry is Doing to Hide It, and How to Protect Your Family. I'm going to invite our listeners to join our conversation. The number is 866-798-TALK. That's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. And we're wondering what restrictions you put on cell phone or iPhone use for your kids. If you use the cell phone, do you think about how to use it safely? Our number is 866-798-TALK. Again, it's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. You can also post a comment at yourcallradio.org or put additional information or send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. And so there are these actual warnings on your iPhone, on your iPad, etc. They're very hard to find, however. In fact, I had never seen these before. We had to go to settings, general, about, legal, RF exposure, and we were talked through how to find this, and it was still really difficult. And on the iPhone 5, it says, to reduce exposure to radio frequency energy, use a hands-free option, such as the built-in speakerphone, the supplied headphones, or other similar accessories. Carry the iPhone at least 10 millimeters away from your body to ensure exposure levels remain at below the as-tested levels. I'm shocked that this isn't more readily available, like that we don't know this, and I consider myself a relatively well-informed person.
Well, the city of San Francisco, in 2010, with the leadership of Gavin Newsom, began and passed unanimously a cell phone right-to-know law, because this is a pretty savvy city. And if you talk to any technology engineers, if you talk to a number of Microsoft engineers I've spoken to lately, they understand a cell phone's a two-way microwave radio. And we are not telling people not to use them. We're telling them to be safe with them. We need to understand that there are biological effects that we have not fully studied. And I think that both Dr. Leszczynski and I agree and have called since 2009 for more research in this field. And the response of the industry, which they've been able to do in the United States very effectively, is to say, we know enough already, and let's just get on with it. But in fact, last year, the U.S. Government Accountability Office issued a report. And that report said, we need more research, and right now the FCC is way behind. The standards for cell phones were set 17 years ago when the average user was a military or medical person, often a male, who was assumed to talk for less than 6 minutes, then maybe 30 minutes. Those standards haven't changed in 17 years. They've never been evaluated for their impact on the developing brain or body. And Korean psychiatrists are now diagnosing something they call digital dementia, which is a classification of brain damage that they are seeing in young children who start out using digital devices. And as you may know, Korea is very tech savvy. And by the time they reach their preteens, their brains are underdeveloped that you can see on a CAT scan or an MRI. They can't look you in the eye as well. They are, as Dr. Leszczynski said, addicted to these devices. They do not have the social skills that you need to have. And we know it's hard enough for children to become adults. It's a long, long process. And they have to learn through seeing, watching, touching, and feeling. And while a young child might learn how to talk or read by playing with a tablet, they're missing the contact, the warmth that children universally require, and for such a short period of time, that it's appalling that we're turning over our childhood to these devices.
And what kind of advisories, restrictions, labeling exist in other parts of the world, Darius?
Well, there are some advisories. For example, in Finland in 2009 was issued advisory for parents to limit usage of cell phones by children because of a lack of knowledge concerning effects of radiation. So we had this kind of... But I would like to mention one very important thing, what most people don't pay attention at all. And it is something very simple. Namely, we can discuss scientific evidence back and forth, and some people agree, some people disagree. But in 2011, when was IARC evaluation of cell phone radiation, whether it is possible, whether it is carcinogen or not, and it arrived at the decision that it is possible carcinogen, then it was based on epidemiological studies that have shown that if person is using cell phone for at least half an hour per day for 10 years, after these 10 years, this person has increased risk of getting brain cancer. And what kind of studies those were? Those were studies where regular people were using regular phones. You go to shop, you buy your cell phone, and with those cell phones, regular users using off-the-shelf cell phones, which are fulfilling all safety standards. So it should be absolutely safe according to industry and different government organizations. Those cell phones that are absolutely safe, when you use it for 10 years for half an hour per day, you end up with increased risk of brain cancer. What it means? It only means this, that those safety standards that are used in the cell phones are inadequate.
And you wanted to get in here, Deborah, about other places around the globe that have regulations.
Yes, based on what Dr. Leszczynski just said and other studies that have been done looking at impacts on the human cells and animal cells and whole animals, the governments of Israel, France, Belgium have also issued advisories, in addition to that that Finland issued with Dr. Leszczynski. And those advisories include, in Belgium, a ban on giving a phone to a child age 7 or under. And in Israel and France, cell phones have to come with information right available to you, not buried in it, about the radiation that they emit. They must be sold with a headset. And the Israelis have just established a National Institute for Research on cell phone radiation, and they are currently issuing advisories about the use of Wi-Fi broadly, including that it should not generally be used in the environments of young children.
And we have an email from David. He says, I'd like to see a study on the amount of radiation that is emitted when a crowd is gathered. It's one factoid when the amount an individual cell phone emits, but what about when 100, 500, 5,000, or 50,000 gather at, say, a stadium with almost everybody emitting some degree of radiation? Can you answer that?
That's a very good question. And the short answer is distance is your friend. But when you have that concentration, I don't know. Darius, what do you think?
Unfortunately, I'm not a dosimetry person. This sort of, one could say, density of radiation is increasing, and we are exposed to more of this radiation, but it is also from some distance. So we are sitting and there on stadium or living all together in this kind of soup, stew of different kinds of microwave radiation emitted by all our variety of our gadgets at home, and there is more and more of this radiation, and we then don't have a faintest idea how this kind of accumulating doses of radiation will be affecting us, whether this distance is sufficiently a good friend or not.
In Toronto recently, they had a public hearing, and we will hear about this at the Commonwealth Club when we hear from Frank Clegg, the former president of Microsoft Canada.
And that's on Monday. All of the information is at yourcallradio.org. Go ahead, Deb.
And on Monday, December 9th, we will be hearing from Mr. Clegg of Canada, who will talk about how they recently turned back an effort to expand Wi-Fi into quiet spaces and parks in Toronto. There are some people who report reactions to these things. We have not been able to evaluate it very well scientifically, but a few studies have demonstrated response. One of the things that I say in my book, Disconnect, which we will be releasing a new paperback edition of it at the Commonwealth Club, one of the things I say in that book is that we are living in a sea of radio frequency radiation that is without precedence. The amount of radio frequency radiation we have even today is several times more than it was even 4 years ago. And the fact that people are handing cell phones to children, infants, like toys, is appalling. I have in my hand here this book I've shown you, rather weathered, from
Verizon.
This
is Verizon. A Verizon handbook.
Right. And
user's guide.
Right. And it says on the discussion, do wireless phones pose any special risk to children? It says, the FDA website says, no, scientific evidence doesn't. But then it says, some groups sponsored by other national governments have advised that children be discouraged from using cell phones at all. For example, the Stewart Report from the United Kingdom made such a recommendation in December of 2000. Now, when I worked at the U.S. National Academy of Sciences, I knew Sir William Stewart as Margaret Thatcher's chief science advisor, who was, among other things, in charge of their chemical weapons decontamination program. He's a first-rate scientist. This report, when I first saw it, I was stunned because at that time I owned three phones. After my first grandson was born, I had a very different outlook on the whole issue. And when I began to look at what we knew and learned about the research of Dr. Leszczynski and others, I was absolutely appalled.
That's a little like the reaction that I'm having as I was preparing for this. Let's go to some of our listeners. Let's go first to Stephen in San Francisco. Welcome to your call, Stephen.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a relatively new smartphone user. I got my first one a couple years ago, and I signed up for alerts for, like, you know, eBay, this or that. So, I wind up getting various noises and beeps coming through my phone. Now, according to my understanding, when you get an incoming call, that produces a surge of the microwave radiation. Do these little small alerts, do they have any effect like that? Is there in other words, should I turn them off to reduce my risk?
Well, certainly what we understand is that the cell phone radiation itself is too weak to directly damage DNA like ionizing radiation does. But it does exactly damage it by the way you've just imagined, Steve. It is that pulse. It's that quick, sudden hit that can have an effect. And we are increasingly concerned that the lifetime impact of that is greater. So, yes, I would say if you must keep your phone on your body, disable those things. Or you can do what I do and put it in your fanny pack, your backpack, and simply put it on the desk and get out of the habit of keeping it on when it's on your body. Put it on airplane mode, and you cannot get any messages. If you want your messages, then take it off your body.
And what about people who sleep with the phone next to them, not literally like on their pillow, but right on the nightstand? I know some of these people.
I understand. And again, distance is your friend. And the slight distance makes a huge difference. But this pamphlet from Verizon said if you have a pacemaker, keep the phone at least 6 inches from your body. Don't carry it in your breast pocket. And be aware that it could interfere.
And here's a web comment from Zach. He writes, the close-range mics in the iPhone 5 and other top smartphones are so terrible, it often garbles the audio, making it unintelligible. Just a point, the only way I can understand my GF is when she uses, my girlfriend, is when she uses Bluetooth or a headset, and as the last resort, a speakerphone. And that's what actually the information tells you to do, not to put it next to your brain.
Well, Zach's a very smart guy, and he may have figured out that the companies know it's really not a good idea to have the phone right smack next to your brain. And when I asked one of the senior executives of Google what on earth were they thinking when they designed a device which with microwave radiation that's right in front of the eye, right in front of the eye, right in front of the brain, that with the microwave radiation that has to come from a device into it, he said, what were they thinking about human health? Well, they weren't. We have, I think here what we have is a technological imperative. If we can do it, we do it. And then later we ask, what could happen? And as a public health expert who worked for years at major institutions in this country and around the world, here's my concern. If we treat this issue like we've treated tobacco, asbestos, or a number of other things.
Which is wait until we have all of the science to put labels on, for example.
Right, which is waiting for the body count. That's what I do as an epidemiologist. I wait for the body count. And when we have enough bodies, we count them and we find an effect. But as Dr. Leszczynski knows, the work we do experimentally is very, very important. And we have experimental evidence of interference. That work on heat shock proteins he was talking about, what does that mean? It means cells cannot fix their damage. All of us get damaged cells every day from sunlight, from life, from oxygen. And if we eat well and we're healthy and we do yoga and all the other things that are important, we repair that damage, particularly if we sleep in the dark. But what cell phone radiation can do is interfere with that. And if your phone is on at night and it's right next to you, it's a bad idea for a lot of reasons. It's not recommended by any health authorities that you do that.
And that is Devra Davis. She's the founder and president of Environmental Health Trust. She's also the author of Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation, What the Industry is Doing to Hide It, and How to Protect Your Family. Devra founded the Environmental Health Trust to provide research and public policy recommendations on the health hazards of cell phone use. We're also speaking with Darius Leszczynski, who's an expert in the biological and health effects of cell phone radiation. He's a research professor with the Finnish Radiation and Nuclear Safety Authority, and he publishes the science blog Between a Rock and a Hard Place, dealing with the issue of cell phone radiation and health. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. We'll get to a lot more of your calls after we take a very short break. All of this information is at yourcallradio.org.
Your call is better when you get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. And you can also send emails to feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment at the show's website, yourcallradio.org. And coming up on World Have Your Say at 11, what do you want explained about the Middle East? The latest stories from there is about the killing of a senior commander of the Lebanese Shia military group Hezbollah. There are so many overlapping elements to the stories, the BBC's expert on the region will attempt to answer your questions. That's on World Have Your Say at 11.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about the growing market of private prisons, including here in California. Friday is our weekly media roundtable. We'll speak with journalists about coverage of the week's news. Today, we're asking, should we be concerned about cell phone radiation? We're talking to scientific experts about cell phones and how they may be affecting our health. A recent study looks at incidence of breast cancer in women who kept cell phones in their bras. Another looks at the effect of cell phone radiation on animal embryos in the womb. But how much do we really know? What do you want to know? What don't we know? And how about the effects of new technology on our children? We're speaking with Deborah Davis, who's a visiting scholar at the Goldman School of Public Policy, and she's the founder and president of the Environmental Health Trust. Darius Lezhinsky is research professor with the Finnish Radiation and Nuclear Safety Authority. We've got lots of links at yourcallradio.org. You can also post questions there and more information in the comments section. And both Deborah and Darius will be speaking about the health risks of cell phones, along with a panel of 11 other experts at the San Francisco Commonwealth Club this coming Monday, December 9th at 11:30 a.m. And all of that information, of course, is at yourcallradio.org. All right, I want to get to as many calls as possible. This is Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, and let's go to Talay from Aptos. Hi, Talay.
Oh, hi. Yeah, it's Talay.
Sorry.
It's all right. I commend you for doing this show. It should be done. We should have like 500 of these shows. All, and it should be a public service announcement continually alerting people to the dangers. I've been following this for a number of years, and I would like to ask two things, which are there's information that I think is a lot of people don't realize about the endogenous opioid system, which is that system that the body has that makes you addicted to alcohol and also addicted to wireless. And I would like to hear the professor speak to that, and then also to the fact that I've learned that by the year 2017, it's been said by some of these experts that half the population on the planet is going to be disabled from the exponential increase in the use of wireless. And I know people who can't even be in a room where there's a cell phone. I myself almost died from wireless exposure, and I eliminated all wireless from my premises, and I made a comeback. And I'm speaking living proof that going back to a landline was a smart thing to do. And we don't have any cordless phone, no cell phones, no Wi-Fi, no wireless at all allowed here. But we have neighbors who use Wi-Fi, and we're getting whacked by them, and we can feel it.
Well, thank you, Talay, and let's get Darius to respond.
Well, first of all, we do not have any research on cell phone radiation and addiction. This one has to think about two aspects of this. Is radiation this factor which causes addiction, or is playing pleasure from using these gadgets so strong stimulus that we are getting addicted? So, but we don't have any research on this. But I would like to...
One second, really quickly, Darius, because Deborah is saying that we do have research on this.
Let me clarify. You may be correct technically, but in fact, as you might remember, Alan Frey in the 1970s showed that if you use naloxone, which is a drug that blocks the opioid receptor that you give people who have overdosed on heroin or methadone, if you use naloxone in animals that have been conditioned to respond to cell phone radiation, they stop responding. So naloxone blocks the opioid receptor. We have experimental evidence that you can interfere with this, and it's drugs, sex, rock and roll, and cell phone radiation all appear to stimulate dopamine, which is what makes us feel good. And so there is some biological basis to thinking that there could be an addiction.
So, yeah, go on, Darius. You were going to bring up another point.
Yes, namely, talking about this breast cancer in women and keeping cell phone in bra and altogether keeping cell phone on your body. It should never, ever happen, because as manufacturers inform, cell phones should be kept at least 1 inch from the body in most of gadgets. This 1 inch makes this, that then this gadget is amount of radiation absorbed by body is below safety standards. These gadgets should be fulfilling safety standards. Once you put this gadget closer than 1 inch to your body, all safety standards go down the drain. Then your cell phone in your breast pocket or in your bra radiates as much as it radiates, and your body absorbs more than safety standards permit. Therefore, one important thing is what people don't realize, that once you put your cell phone next to your body, on your body, safety standards go down the drain.
Thank you for that. Amy emails us and says, what about the antennas? Some people live next to cell phone antennas and through no choice of their own and have no say in the 24/7 exposure that they get.
The antenna issue is really challenging, because if you don't want an antenna, don't use your phone. The fact of the matter is, we need to rethink our approach to antennas, as they are doing in many governments around the world. If we had more antennas with less average power, we would have less exposure when we used phones. It's a complicated thing. I don't know if we can get into discussing it. But in fact, if you are right next to an antenna, if it's right behind you or something, you can get a lot of exposure. In an urban environment, it's the line of sight, and a single tower may have 20 antennas on it.
And I want to get to as many calls as we can. Mimi in Monterey, welcome to your call.
Oh, thank you. I had just a couple of simple questions. One, in regards to the phone now being, him saying that it should be at least 1 inch away from your body, is that basically why when you buy most new smartphones, they come with like the headphone set for that? And then my other question is in regards to old cell phones, because I always see little kids playing with like dad's old cell phone or mom's old cell phone, if there's any radiation exposure from that. And then my last question is in regards to laptops and Kindles, you know, and notebooks, what kind of exposure are we getting there?
Do you want to take this one, Deborah?
Let me just say, first of all, Environmental Health Trust is issuing new safety cards called Practice Safe Tech. And it says, practice safe tech, do it with wires. And the idea is, use wires whenever you can. Get a landline for security purposes, by the way, because when cell signals go out, your powered landline will work. And we need a national conversation about the fact that the U.S. government, as a matter of policy, is now moving to phase out landlines. Buildings are being built that will only take Wi-Fi. This is a bad idea for a lot of reasons. Wireless is not safe, it's not secure, and it's not swift. It's not fast, and we no matter how much we build, we will not be able to get the full capacity. Many countries have faster broadband speeds than we do, and that's because they are using wired lines for fiber optic and then Wi-Fi within a smaller area. That makes some sense, but not the way we're doing it, to try to use it over large distances, committing entire cities to being in this soup of radio frequency radiation.
And what about Mimi's second question about old cell phones that are kids playing with these?
As the Convoy 2 says in its warnings, a cell phone is not a toy. That's what Samsung officially says. And in fact, children have always played with toy phones. That's always been the case. Letting them play with a toy is fine as long as it's disabled, it's not connected to anything. The child doesn't know, but you don't want to give a child a phone that's attached to the network, that's attached to Wi-Fi. Because then you are exposing your child to microwave radiation, which is foolish.
And let's go to Kevin in Felton. Hi, Kevin.
Oh, hi. One of your guests mentioned this issue, and it's the fact that the transmitter receivers are now being mounted on ordinary power poles. And in urban areas, they're turning up all over the cornices that's the roof edge of buildings. And I've seen apartment units where a transmitter will be pointing directly at someone else's apartment, say, depending on the shape of the building. And I understand the inverse square law. I wondered if these transmitters, if there's any regulation that requires them to have a lower wattage output, or if they're just allowed to put whatever they want up there, et cetera.
Well,
I think this is like...
In the United States...
people haven't even faced yet.
Right.
You could end up with one of these across... the street from your house on a power pole pointing right at you.
Yeah, we will discuss these kinds of issues at the Commonwealth Club December 9th, this coming Monday. In the United States, it is against federal law to raise any concerns about health with respect to the sighting of a tower. That was passed in 1996. As a matter of federal law, you may not raise a health issue. So we need to rethink our national policy on this. Darius, I'm not aware of other policies as well as you may be. Perhaps you're in Austria, for example.
No, I think that there is not really strict policy, but it is sort of general advice that it is, whenever it is possible, feasible, to not locate towers on schools, near to hospitals, and in this kind of more this type of places where children and sick people could be more exposed. But I think that there is not even this type of regulation that they would be obliged by law. But it is causes a lot of aggravation in community, and that's why those who are sitting those towers rather avoid this kind of locations like schools, just not to cause additional problems when they can put it somewhere nearby, not exactly on school, but somewhere nearby, and say that distance is your friend and nothing will happen. But problem is that these are exposures that are 24/7, and when they last 24/7 for 80, 90 years, what is our lifetime, we don't have the faintest idea what they can cause. Will they cause anything? Will we adapt? Because however, human body is very flexible and can adapt to different conditions. Will we adapt to this, or will it cause us some problems? And this, not only this towers, but as we are all the time talking that we are living in this kind of soup of wireless emissions, in not only towers, not only our cell phones, houses are full of this kind of radiation emitted by wireless.
And Darius, we are full of callers and emails, and I really want to get to as many of them as I can. Jessica in San Francisco writes, thanks so much for this show. I'm on maternity leave and listening eagerly with my seven-month-old. I have a few questions. Most importantly, my husband is very skeptical. Can you point me toward any research or peer-reviewed scientific papers that would convince a skeptic? And she's got a couple others. How far from the body should a cell phone be? Any comments on baby monitors, which also emit radiation? And is it dangerous to have Wi-Fi internet running in the home with a baby?
Okay, first of all, I use a cell phone, and I do recommend that if people have concerns, personal concerns, you can turn your router off at night. It's not that hard. The most important thing I advise schools, and we're working with them now to make sure they have safe programs, is the location of the router. It's the location. If you locate them high up in the ceiling, away from where children are going to be, it's fine. But if you locate it right at the head level in the back of someone in a classroom, it's not fine. The evidence you can tell your husband about that's strong is on sperm. There have been more than 7 studies that have been reviewed by Professor Stanton Glantz of the University of California, San Francisco, in his new edition, Biostatistics in Medicine, 7th edition.
And he was the huge advocate against tobacco.
Right. He still is doing a great job on that. Professor Glantz looked at all of the data and concluded that based on what we had at that time, which was now 2 years ago, cell phone radiation clearly causes sperm damage. You have fewer sperm. The studies that were done, and there were several of them, took a test tube of sperm from one man. One test tube gets exposed, the other does not. The test tube exposed to cell phone radiation, the sperm die 3 times faster, have 3 times more damage on their mitochondrial DNA. In addition, as to baby monitors, they use the same Wi-Fi frequency as a cell phone and a microwave oven. If you need a baby monitor, if your child is sick and you really need to monitor it that way, or you live in a huge house, keep the monitor several feet away from the baby. But when a baby cries, as you all know, you will hear it. And make sure to turn it off. get in the habit of turning things off when you don't need them.
And the American Academy of Pediatrics still recommends that kids should not, under two, should never be exposed to any screen, right?
That is correct. And they recently affirmed that and wrote to the Federal Communications Commission raising the issue of why has the FCC not addressed the issue of children given this tremendous growth in apps. I found it quite interesting that the Silicon Valley folks who developed some of these apps, according to the Atlantic Monthly story on them, do not send their children or let their children play with these things, ever.
And let's go to George in San Francisco. Hi, George. Welcome to your call.
Hi. One wonders if you would mind possibly in the next, as you have wisely addressed this subject before, you might include in the next go-round when this comes up again, maybe you can make it part of your regular rotation to discuss this issue. What about the so-called smart meters? The question that came up impelled us to call this morning is, if the recommendation is 1 inch or more from your body, well, we all see people running around, and we run around with these phones on us. We use them in convenient locations like riding the bus or possibly in close quarters like elevators, walking along in the street. How do you keep it an inch from your body? What part of your body? And is there any kind of a garment or a suggestion for an accessory that can make it safer?
Well, there's the million-dollar idea. I love it. Right. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, the U.S. military has garments that allow people to be very close to radar. They have to. But they're really like moon suits. I don't think that's very practical for most of us. And one of the problems is there are things you can buy that will protect your body from the direct exposure, but then we don't know what that does to the other part of your body, and we can't all go around living in a kind of bubble. So that's not a practical solution. I love your idea of a regular rotation of radio shows on this topic because there really are so many things to discuss, and I think we can't get into the smart meter issue here today except to say that there's growing concern. And some health officials in California have looked at the evidence and said, hey, this is really not clearly a safe issue. We've got to be aware that there will be repeater meters that will give a whopping dose of radiation occasionally. And again, location, location, location of where a smart meter is located. The secret about smart meters you'll be hearing about at the Commonwealth Club in January when there'll be a program led by Camilla Reese where she will be talking about the whole network and how vulnerable the U.S. grid is because of this. There was recently a rehearsal of what would happen. And our grid is extremely vulnerable. And if you rely on wireless for the safety grid, you've actually undermined our national security.
And let's go to Julia in Santa Cruz. Hi, Julia. Welcome to your call.
Hi there. Thank you so much for bringing me on to speak with you, and thank you for having these experts online with you. Particularly concerned about the evidence I have personally of the honeybees being affected by the wireless radiation. Graduate students came to my garden.
So, Julia, we have a really bad line with you, so I'm going to ask you to be brief, okay? So honeybees.
I think I can answer this question right now. There have been studies that have taken cordless phones and put them into a hive, and one hive gets a cordless phone that's on, and one hive gets a cordless phone that's not on. The hive on which the cordless phone is turned on, most of the bees do not come back. So it clearly can interfere with them. A lot of things are affecting bees and colony collapse disorder now, including some pesticides, some fungicides, et cetera. But certainly this can be a factor. And Einstein, among others, pointed out that without bees, we have no civilization because we have no food.
And Julia had a second part to her question. Go ahead, Julia. Just try to be brief because we can barely hear you.
Yes. Concerning my attempt to bring health awareness and the hazards of the expanded.
Okay, Julia, I'm gonna go ahead and just. I think I've got what you're gonna say, which is you're trying to get the Board of Soups to pay attention, but they favor Verizon over citizens. Yeah. So what legislators are paying attention?
Well, the city still has its law. And the
this is San Francisco.
The right to know.
She's
law.
In Santa Cruz.
Right. The town of Jackson, Wyoming, has passed a proclamation that you might want to develop in Santa Cruz. It's called the right to know about cell phones. That's all it is. It says we want cell phone advisories to be made available through the city. We, through the Chamber of Commerce of Jackson Hole, have given out more than 30,000 pamphlets and information as a matter of public information. There is valuable public information that Environmental Health Trust has developed. You go to our website, environmentalhealthtrust.org. Click on downloads.
All of this is at yourcallradio.org.
And our downloads include safety pamphlets, which have now been given out by the Finnish government, by the way, in Finnish, Turkish, French, Spanish, and Greek. So we have information that you can give out. It's one page, safety pamphlet.
And all of that is at yourcallradio.org. You can also post more information there and continue this conversation. But are there any particular legislators at the national level in the United States that are paying attention to some of this?
Yes. In 2009, Dr. Leshinsky and I testified before the U.S. Senate, before Senator Spector and Senator Harkin. They are both no longer with us, unfortunately. And at that point, we called for a major research program. That need is even more urgent now than it was then. The U.S. does have one huge study underway, cost more than $100 million, with animals, which may or may not be particularly useful, but it has no routine monitoring of humans, particularly children, for their effects. We have no training programs for doctors in bioelectromagnetics. We have no training program for engineers in medicine. And as a consequence, most physicians are ignorant of the recommendations of the American Academy of Pediatrics. I'm talking to the Society of Neuro-Oncology now. Several leaders in that society who treat brain tumors are deeply concerned and are giving advice to their patients. If you have a brain tumor, for goodness sakes, don't hold a cell phone next to your brain.
And let's go to Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg.
Hello. Maybe this is redundant, but I'm going to turn my radio down. I live in Palo Alto, and the city of Palo Alto, I approached them with regard to this issue, especially with wireless routers in the libraries, which create problems for me. And I asked them about this. They poo-pooed it. Their head of their technology section, like I said, just dismissed it out of hand, said there's no studies. So what I'm asking is, and you may have already covered this, is there something, because these people are not going to read the bioinitiative report. they're not even going to read most technical stuff that I could give to them. So is there some research, a research paper that's not really lengthy but really goes to the whole issue of Wi-Fi and routers and used in, say, a library, and I'm talking about the children's library in Palo Alto in particular, which I could then give to the city of Palo Alto and say, look, here's evidence, Wi-Fi does cause this kind of problem, and we could have some discussion, a reasonable discussion about this.
We'll post all of this at yourcallradio.org. Deborah Davis has written a book called Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation, What the Industry is Doing to Hide It, and How to Protect Your Family.
And Darius, I'll ask you if you know more about this. But my understanding is that as a matter of disability rights in Sweden, there can be some protection against Wi-Fi, and that the French National Library has removed Wi-Fi from many of its facilities out of these kinds of concerns. There's a growing recognition that there are some sensitivities here and that there are some people who simply cannot be in places where there is a very high level of this radiation. At the same time, the science on this is incredibly weak because it's very, very difficult to study something that you're a part of. We have no control group. We are really experimenting on ourselves.
Darius?
Yes. Problem with Wi-Fi is this, that any research began just a few years ago. It is not even 10 or 20 years, or it is just 3-4 last years when really research on potential effects of Wi-Fi began. What it means that we don't know anything. Then anybody, all authorities, like somewhere in library and so on, they use excuse that we have a certain safety standards, and we go by the book according to the safety standards, everything is safe, everything is okay, no problem. But we simply don't know. And for this purpose is this simple issue of precaution, and this developed by European Union precautionary principle. It is precautionary principle is for this kind of issues where we have some science about topic, we know that there is a potential risk, but we don't have enough science to make clear-cut decision. And cell phone radiation, Wi-Fi is all this kind of issue. We have some research. We have a lot of red flags. We don't have enough information to make final and decisive decision.
So I would say that the absence of evidence should not be taken as proof of safety.
All right, and we've got 2 minutes left. I'm going to give you the last word here. We have so many emails and phone calls that I couldn't get to. I apologize. What is your advice to parents, politicians, and citizens?
Well, first of all, I agree with your listeners. We need a regular program on this. I think it's a very important issue, particularly here in San Francisco. For parents, distance is your friend. Cell phones are not toys. Keep these devices limited. Follow the recommendations of the American Academy of Pediatrics, which is that children have no more than 2 hours a day of screen time of all kinds. That's their official recommendation. Look for information on your website,
yourcallradio.org,
where we will provide all of the downloads, make it very easy for people to get these things. Practice safe tech means do it with wires. Whenever possible, wire in your computer, wire in your phone, and recognize that you can minimize your exposures. Some practical advice that we give: avoid talking with the phone right next to your body. When the signal is weak, you know your battery drains fast. Why is that? Because the phone is smart. It's looking for the tower, and it will use whatever it can to get that signal, and all that radiation drains into you. Avoid sleeping with your phone or having it on your body, except if it's on airplane mode. Get in the habit of turning it off sometimes. You'll be amazed. Put it on airplane mode. It protects you. And, of course, never text while driving.
And that's Dr. Devra Davis. She's a visiting scholar at the Goldman School of Public Policy, and she is the founder and president of Environmental Health Trust. She's also the author of Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation, What the Industry is Doing to Hide It, and How to Protect Your Family. We've also been joined by Dr. Darius Lisinski, who's a research professor with the Finnish Radiation and Nuclear Safety Authority. We're going to put links to all of their information at yourcallradio.org. They'll be with a panel at the Commonwealth Club on Monday. Again, all that information is at yourcallradio.org. I'm Holly Kernan. What's at stake as prisons go private? On the next Your Call, we'll talk about the expansion of the private prison industry. California has been ordered to reduce its prison population by 8,000 inmates by the end of February. One of Jerry Brown's options is to transfer some of those people to privately owned facilities. So how do private prisons work? Who's ending up in them and who's profiting? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcasts, visit yourcallradio.org. You can also friend us on Facebook. Ali Budner and Malihe Razazan produce the show. Matt Martin is the executive producer. Phil Hartman is the chief engineer. Debbie Kennedy is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.